You're listening to WCOM-FM, LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on the dial, and live streaming from WCOMFM.org. As a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. From Main Street to Wall Street, the issues impacting your business, we're talking leadership, technology, politics, regulation, and success stories that inspire. It's time to focus on business. I'm your host, author, speaker, entrepreneur, and business consultant, Lee Strickland. I'm the CEO of Focus Resources and 2S Innovations and founder of the Network for Business Growth. I've also created the Core Business Transformation System. And now today's program. Focus on business. Well, everyone, thanks for joining me on this lovely Tuesday. It's a bright, blue, sunny day here in North Carolina. And today I want to talk about making your business have a blue sky opportunity with the sun shining on it and it's an ability to grow. And how do we do that? Well, at the end of June, I had an article run in Fast Company magazine called Use This Formula to Write a Solid Business Plan in 30 Minutes or Less. And if my clients are listening, I would really want you to continue to take more time than 30 minutes on your business plan. But the reality is that the majority of businesses get started without a plan. It's just kind of a fly by the seat of your pants type thing. We're going to jump into it. We'll figure it out later. And later never comes, or later comes at the point that all the resources have run out. And so in this article that I wrote for Fast Company, I share a story of a current client that was starting a new retail business, and she was finding it pretty expensive to set up. And so by the time she looked at the space, the extensive renovations that needed to be happening, the basic equipment that she needed, and it definitely was not cheap, and it was the minimum amount of equipment that she needed. And then she looked at, you know, inventory costs and staffing costs and all the things that were there. Just in general, she kind of knew she needed a lot of money, but she didn't know how much. And then she didn't know how long she would need to be putting money into the business because she hadn't done the math. She hadn't even sat down and with a, you know, they call it a back of an envelope look at the business to figure out what it was going to take to start this business. So all those investments I was just talking about. And she hadn't sat down and thought about, okay, how long will it take to renovate my space? And how long will it take for me to get everyone trained? And how long will it be before I open my doors? And just all of those things that are about starting a business and that timeline to ramping up, to be really being in production, really being able to serve the customer, deliver the product or service. And then she needed to look at how long it was going to take to start generating revenue to pay the monthly bills, to break even every month, and then to pay back that money that she had invested in that time, that ramp-up period of her business. And so what I realized after 15 years of doing business myself is that even the most savvy entrepreneurs that know what needs to happen in their business skip the process of drawing up a business plan. Part of it is they think it's, you know, I hear it all the time, it's a waste of my time and it's a waste of my resources when I could actually be starting the business. But the reality is the process of planning your business, the process of thinking through your assumptions, the process of quantifying what it's going to take for your business to get started, to get going, to get the first customer, to have the profits coming in, to have the cash flow, to cover the costs on a monthly basis, and then to start paying back the money you have invested or the money you have borrowed in the business during that time you weren't generating profits. And to become a sustainable business is something that we really have to sit down and think about. Many businesses do not become truly profitable and sustaining at a level that allows them to fund both growth and continued cost.
until about year three of being in business. And I know that's what a lot of my clients don't want to hear. But the more you have to invest up front in the business, the more ongoing costs of being in business are there. The reality is the business has to get momentum. It has to grow. And that growth comes from being able to focus your business and to minimize the costs and mistakes and the issues that are challenging you about being in business. And so when we look at our businesses, we really need to take at least 30 minutes to think through our business. If it's only us, and if we only sit down with a scratch piece of paper or an envelope, even a napkin in a restaurant, but sit down and draw out your business and understand what it takes in terms of time, people, and resources to make your business get going, to start strong, and be positioned to succeed. So we call this the save yourself from early failure formula. And that means that the process of thinking through your business, even if you don't do a detailed plan, meaning you're not going to sit down and spend hours and days going through and doing market research and all those kind of things, you should at least follow a 7-step formula that I shared in the article, and I'm going to share it today, that sketch out the basics of your business. So it doesn't have to take very long, but if you find yourself struggling to answer these questions in 30 minutes or less, then you need to take more time and you need to think through that aspect of your business that you haven't developed, that you haven't given enough thought to. And so we're going to go over the 7 steps in this formula, and we're going to call this from, again, the save yourself from early failure formula, because the first thing you want to do is document your assumptions about how your business is going to operate, where it's going to operate. So those assumptions include investment in space and equipment, hours of operation, your staffing needs, wages and salaries, benefits, taxes, insurance, rent. You need to add it all up and figure out what will be the ongoing cost of those elements for your business, those monthly costs. You also need to take a look at those costs to identify the ones that will have one-time upfront or major reoccurring costs over a period of time to get your basic capacity in place. You're opening a retail store. Let's say you're going to sell clothing. You need shelving. You need display accessories. You need display equipment. You need cash registers. You need, you know, all of these elements that when you think about walking into a retail clothing store that need to be in place. And so visualize how your business is going to look, how it's going to operate. If you're going to be an online business, what does that look like? One of my past clients and a very good friend is launching an internet-based retail business, and they've been working very hard on the visuals of that retail store online. Everything from the logo to the colors of the website to the flow of information, and most importantly, to the ease of the customer coming in, finding the product options, and then being able to order and understand how to order. And so document your business process, your assumption about how things are going to work and where you're going to operate, whether it's a physical space, whether it's an internet virtual space, or a combination of both. You need to spend time thinking about those elements and document them. And try to push yourself to think of all the little costs that will be in there. I was talking to a business insurance person, I guess it's been about a month ago. And what she's been finding is a lot of businesses are canceling their business insurance, their errors and omissions insurance, their business interruption insurance, or even their product liability insurance because they say they can't afford it. They want to spend the money on something else. As a business advisor, I tell you, you can't afford not to have the right kind of insurance coverages from a liability standpoint and then from a business continuity standpoint. I grew up in West Virginia. I think I've mentioned that several times on the show. And recently, at the end of June, around June 28th, The town I grew up in, the town I went to high school in, was hit by a major flood, a lot like the town of Columbia in South Carolina was not too long ago. And many businesses and homes were wiped out. And what we find is the majority of the homes, the majority of the businesses didn't have flood insurance. And so now they're faced with not only not being able to operate their businesses, their customer base is gone for an extended period of time because people have lost their homes. That's who they served. When they didn't have flood insurance, they don't have coverage for the fact that the flood wiped out their business. And other insurances do not cover the losses. And we've talked about that on this show before. But insurance isn't a thing that's nice to have. It's a necessity to have at certain levels to understand what those levels are. Because when you're not in business and you're not able to do business, then that disruption, that not only the loss of income, but the cost of going back into business, to restocking your inventory if you're a grocery store, to restoring the buildings into habitable, usable, functional buildings again, because it's the electrical, it's the flooring, it's the walls, it's painting, it's all the furniture, it's all the fixtures. It's starting from scratch. And that's something a lot of businesses can't afford. And back home, I'm pretty confident that many businesses will not reopen their doors. And so their employees who have lost their homes, they've also lost their jobs. And so as business owners, when we're thinking about and planning our business, whether it's starting the business or while we're in business, we need to understand where we need to make key, and I call insurance investments in the business, to protect our ability to be in business and stay in business in the face of unexpected costs, unexpected disasters, whether that's natural disasters or man-made disasters. So in planning your business, plan it lean, but plan it smart. And so when we're looking at those things that we're planning to make those investments, those expenses that we're going to have to make on a monthly basis, we often need to take a look at that and say, okay, not only do I need $100,000 to equip my space or to build my website, to get my initial inventory, to set up my offices, whatever that is, we need to understand what it will take to recover the cost of that. What does that break down to? And so that's the second step in the process, and that's understanding how those expenses and those investments break down in units and to per hour and or to per customer cost. How many units, how many shirts do I have to sell to recover those costs? How many shirts do I have to sell to recover those costs plus make a profit? How many customers do I need making an average sale to them, whatever that average sale is, to be in business and then to grow my business? We frequently get caught up into talking about break-even numbers in business. When are you going to break even? Meaning you're generating as much revenue as you're generating expenses. But my goal as a business advisor is not to get my clients to break even. That should be, you know, the small little milestone in the long run. The place we want to get to is where we're profitable and we're generating sufficient profits and cash flow to grow the business, to hire more employees, to expand to new locations, to take on more customers, to increase our capacity. And when we sit down and look at our list of what we're doing, if we can translate that into how many units of things do we need to sell, how many hours of consulting services do I have to sell to cover my expenses each month, and then how many customers does that equate to? And that means we have to take a step back and we have to look at our assumptions and how we're operating, that cost structure, how much we want to pull out of the business as our salaries and how much we're going to be paying our other team members. And if we have co-owners or investors, how much return do we need to give them? If we have a bank loan, how much do we need to generate to cover that? And so that takes us to step three. And in step three, we are setting down and trying to determine the average dollar value of a sale that we'll be making. So if we're a consulting business, like I have a consulting business, and I look at what I'm offering to startup businesses and over the course of getting them started up, is that going to be a $500 sale on average? Is it going to be a $5,000 sale on average? Or is it going to be a $50,000 sale on average? Because that helps us get back to that thing of how many customers do we need? And how many customers can we serve with our capacity that we're putting in place with our investments, with those expenses that we're incurring each month? And by determining an average dollar value of a sale will help us generate the assumptions, the basic equation of our success. How much sales, what revenue amount can we generate at that average value of a sale? If I want to generate $1 million a year and my average sale is $5,000, how many sales do I have to make? And then how often does a customer buy? And so how many customers does it take at that average sales rate, at that average sales unit to hit my sales goal, my revenue goal? And how profitable are those sales? And so we're looking to dig into our assumptions to understand how that relates to our financial goals, to what we have to do in the business. So we're in step one, when we're documenting our business assumptions, everything from, you know, where we're going to be located, how much rent we have to pay, how many employees we need, or how many contractors, and looking at all of that, how much do we need to spend on having someone help us do payroll or pay our payroll taxes or collect and remit our sales and use tax? All of those little technical things that are in there that we will often overlook from inexperience or lack of knowledge of those type of things impacting our business, but have to be done. I didn't know about it. Isn't really a good answer to the IRS when they come knocking on the door. And in step two, when we're breaking those expenses and investments down, we need to understand what capacity we've put in place at a per unit level, at a per hour level, and a per customer level. And how does that equate then to the sales level that we're going to be able to generate? We calculate in step three that average dollar value of a sale, and then we convert that to in step four to the number of sales needed that I was just talking about, and to cover the cost, the break even, and then to get beyond that. And then we evaluate in step five that complete capacity to achieve that sales volume. I've seen many businesses start with an assumption that they're going to be, you know, a six-figure business in their, you know, their first 6 months of business. And what they realize is that with just two people and at the average sales volume and at the average sales value, the per unit dollar value of a sale, they can't achieve that goal no matter how hard they work, no matter how many hours in the day, because they don't have enough hours in a day to make that work. And if I go back to that client, retail client I was talking about, when she sat down and started doing the back of the envelope calculations, those rough calculations, she found out that with her planned staff of 8 people and the product offering that she was going to be doing in her retail store, she needed $960 for labor. She was going to be investing $1,440 for inventory on a daily basis, and she had fixed overhead items such as rent, utilities, the business insurance, which was another $530 a day. So her average daily cost, based on her assumption, was going to be $2,930 a day. And so then, now that didn't take into consideration all the money that she was investing to get started, to upfit the place, to pay her rent during that upfit time, the furniture, the fixtures, all of those types of things, the training time, all of that, marketing, promotion, signage, the, you know, all those kind of things that are in there. When she looked at that, her actual number came out to be, on a daily basis, her total expenses ended up being $7,810 when she put everything in there. So that would just be her break-even number. With what she had known, which things she'd really thought about, she added another 10% after we were talking for the sales and use tax and the permits and property taxes and all kinds of things she had to do. So then we found her break-even jumped up to $8,591 a day she had of expenses based on what she was assuming she was going to do. And so then we took that number. That was the cost. That was what she arrived at with her business assumptions in step one and in step two. Then we started looking to figure out what then did she need? How many customers did she need? What was the average sale, value of the sale that she was going to make? Well, it turned out when we looked at her numbers, she was going to, on average, sell $15 per customer per day. That meant she needed 573 customers a day just to cover costs, just to break even. And her store only had the capacity at any given time due to the layout, due to fire codes and those kind of things, to have 20 people in her store at a time. So she could serve 20 people per hour if everyone changed out every hour, right? And we all know it doesn't quite work that way. But just assuming that she could put 20 people per hour through her store, she had to be up in 28.6 hours a day. So not just a 24-hour day, she had to find an extra just over four and a half hours a day to break even. And so when we were talking about her assumptions and we were talking about what she wanted to accomplish, she had to step back because there was no way with her operating assumptions, with how she wanted to do business, to stay in business. So when she stepped back and she reevaluated her business assumptions, she went back through step one. She found she couldn't cut down anything with the space she had identified, with the cost of the upfit, the cost of things, the equipment and stuff she was going to need to change that investment number. She could change her hours of operation, but even if she was open 24 hours a day, she couldn't be open enough. And so when she went back through it, she realized at the location she had chosen, she couldn't do business and stay in business. And that's really not that unusual for businesses that jump in and have a high investment cost to start up. I was working this year with another business, so it's a service business, doing some training and some other things. And she immediately jumped into a 3.5-4 year lease on 1,200 square feet of space in one of the more desirable buildings in our TP, Research Triangle Park here in North Carolina. And so she's jumping in immediately with a substantial amount of rent. She had a substantial amount of cost to have the brand new space equipped and designed and interior designed for what she wanted to accomplish and the looks that she wanted. And so when we were sitting down and I was asking her to come up with an equipment list for furniture, for things that she had to have, and she says, well, I know what I need. I was like, but do you know how much it's going to cost? Even if you got some things used from other businesses or from other retail outlets that you can get used equipment and used furniture from, she was looking at another $10,000 to $20,000 in investment in just furniture and equipment to fit the space the way she wanted it. Then you start looking at, okay, how long is it going to take to get a customer then? So she'd been in business about 3 months and wasn't in her space. And then it was going to be another 6 weeks or so before she was in her space. And then one of her training cycles would run about 3 to 6 weeks, depending on when it started and how many people were in it. And you run through those assumptions and you find very quickly that the model that she had for her business didn't cover the ongoing costs of doing business, didn't cover the assumptions of how many employees she would be adding on a monthly basis. And so it's asking her to step back and say, does it have to be done the way you're talking about it? Can you invest less? Hold off on some of the equipment, some of the furniture? Can you do things differently? At the time I started working with her, she no longer had an option not to spend money on a high-end retail office space in a prominent building in the area because she'd already signed the lease. And so looking at that, once you're committed to that, and it's a personal commitment 9 times out of 10 when you're starting a business, that you've personally guaranteed that you'll be paying that $3,000, that $3,500, that $4,000 a month for your office space when you sign a lease, she had to step back and change some assumptions on how she was going to do business. One of the challenges she had, though, was that her commitment to the way she thought things should work And that's frequently a stumbling block in revising your business assumptions, is because as much as we wish things would work a different way, so much of how we have to do business because of government regulations, of tax codes, of when we can determine someone's an employee and when someone's an independent contractor, how we can comply with those rules and minimize our cost takes key strategic decisions in your business assumptions. And so we hear something about failing early and failing often when we're going to test our business or going to test anything, when we're going to try something. In business, the best way to fail early and often before you get started, and it's through working through a business plan and developing your business assumptions and testing those and quantifying those and seeing if your assumptions on how things work match up with the real world. As much as we wish we could work around sales and use tax exists. As much as we would like to think if we put all of our employees on salary, they're now exempt from overtime, we know that's not true. And we know that there will be ongoing changes to things like minimum wage and overtime, and we've been talking about that on the show. Government regulations on how we do business, paying property tax, sales and use tax fluctuations, what's included and what's not included. We need to understand those things. If we're going to be a government contractor, the rules would be different for us, and what regulations we have to comply with might hit us earlier than they would be if we were just simply a small business doing business in the private sector. So really, again, I can't emphasize this enough, you have to be willing to spend time and make an effort to work through your business assumptions, to understand what it is, how it impacts your business, what are the expectations for doing business. I worked with a dental practice that was going to start up here in North Carolina or South Carolina, and sitting down with them and realizing they didn't understand how important it was to go to the bank with a well-developed financial picture of what they were going to need to be spending money on, that they understood the salaries, that they understood the competition in the area, that they had a list of equipment that they needed, how much space did they needed, and to understand the variations between different towns in our communities as to the salary cost levels and different regulations and how long would it take to get permits and occupancy things addressed in upfitting spaces and how long would it take to order equipment and get it in place. And so it often seems to clients and people thinking about starting a business, whether they've been in business before or not, that it's a waste of time and effort to sit down and put pen to paper and try to do calculations. But if you want to have the best chance of succeeding and to save yourself from failure, from early failure, from running out of money and not being able to keep your commitments, then you need to take at least 30 minutes, I argue 30 days, of sitting and talking through the process. And I'm not saying 8 hours a day, but give yourself time to think about your assumptions, to do some research. If you're going to open a retail clothing store, to understand the different options for space, size of space, ordering and supplying your store, getting the right mix of things. If you're going to be a restaurant, to understand the different dynamics of how to be a restaurant. Restaurants are one of those things that are so challenging to run that it has probably the highest failure rate of what would be called traditional businesses because of managing the processes, obeying the regulations, keeping things up to code, serving the customers, and competing. I know sitting here right now in the radio station's studio, if I think about when I started the show 3 years ago, how many restaurants were within visual, literally look out the window and how many restaurants were there for us to eat at. And today, the number of restaurants that I can see just looking out the studio's windows is probably four times as many in just 3 years. And so the existing businesses have to step it up. How they do business, how they serve the customer, all of those kind of things matter. Are you going to compete head-to-head if you're going to be a coffee shop with a Starbucks on the opposite side of the compound or the shopping center? What is it that you're going to be doing? What assumptions are you making? What business are you going to be in? Work through those numbers, through the paper, and look at that. And when we come back, I'm going to go back over steps 1 through 5, and then we're going to talk about steps 6 and 7, and we're going to work through some of those. Why I can't take the time, I can't take the money, I just got to be doing it, and finding that right time to take the jump, to take the plunge, to become a business owner. And we'll be right back. Focus on Business would like to thank our underwriter, Close HR Connections. Ann Close of Close HR Connections has been on the show, and she is a great supporter of WCOM-FM and Focus on Business. Visit their website, closehrconnections.com. Focus on Business is underwritten by Focus Resources. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com. That's focusresourcesinc.com. If you would like to become an underwriter for Focus on Business or any of the WCOM FM LP 103.5 programs or the station, visit the WCOMFM.org website for information on underwriting shows, becoming an individual sponsor, becoming a Golden Voice sponsor, or how to volunteer with the station. That's WCOMFM.org. We're on the air because you care and you underwrite our programs. You're listening to Focus on Business on WCOM-FM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. That's 103.5 on the dial. And now, back to Focus on Business.
And we're back. And before that little short break, we were talking about how to write a business plan, a solid business plan, even if you just spend 30 minutes or less on doing it. And again, I have an article at fastcompany.com, and you can just type in Lee Strickland, LeeStrickland, or type in, use this formula to write a solid business plan in 30 minutes or less, and pull up the article, and it will give you all the talking points that I've been discussing today. What we want to do, I want to recap the first 5 steps in writing a business plan, even if it's just the 30-minute business plan. At least think through a lot of the steps and get some of the answers and help, but help yourself get acclimated, pointed in the right direction. Find your North Star that you can focus on and say, this is the path I'm going to take. So step 1 was to document your assumptions. What equipment do you need? Where are you going to set up? Your hours of operation? What staff do you need, etc.? Then we want to break those expenses in step 2 down and investments down into per unit, per hour, per customer cost, so that we have something that's relatable to our sales goals. In step 3, we figure out what our average dollar sales value is going to be. And so we can equate that to our overall revenue goal for the business. Then we calculate the number of sales that we need to cover our costs, that break-even number. Well, break-even should be a milestone, but it's something we quickly want to surpass. We want to get beyond break-even into profitability and levels of cash and profit generation that enable us to grow. And then we want to look at our capacity and see if we can achieve the sales volume that all of our assumptions are heading us toward. So we want a $1 million business. How many sales do we need to make? If we want $100,000 business in the first year, how many sales do we need to make? How many customers do we need to have? How many hours do we need to be open? So step 6 then is something that has been interwoven into these earlier steps, in that it's setting that profit goal and determining the sales volume you need to hit it. We set a break-even volume. Let's say we're looking at the retail space that we were talking about earlier with one of my clients, and they're spending basically $10,000 a day, open 30 days out of the month. And so they need $300,000 a month to cover their expenses. And so at $15 per average sale, the numbers just didn't add up for them. But what number would have added up? They needed to work through that. They needed to set a profit goal. They needed to set that sales goal. They needed to make all of their assumptions come together so that what they wanted to achieve in sales and in profits matched up to their sales volumes that they could generate, to their cost structures that they had had to be putting in place. And based on all of those, we do step seven. We start again. We revise our operating and financial assumptions based on our targets. We recalculate our numbers. We change our assumptions. We make those changes. And it's less expensive. It's less painful. It's less stressful to be using an eraser on a piece of paper or wadding up a piece of paper and starting over and writing our assumptions down and changing what we think we're going to do and how we're going to operate, even if it's just in the initial phase, than it is to go into business, to make a commitment of $4,000 or more a month in rent for your space, to hire employees, to be paying them salaries, and to then not to be able to pay them. One client I was working with has tremendous integrity, I have to say, about how he communicated to his client, his customers and his employees when the business was struggling. It was an established business that had been purchased. None of the previous owners had ever achieved true extended sustainable profitability, and my client thought he could do it. And so when he was struggling and having to let people go and tell them, okay, in order for us to stay in business, we have to make some tough decisions because we have to change how we were doing business. They didn't need 25 people for their business. They needed 10 people for their business. And so that was very costly and stressful for him to be sitting down with each person and saying, this is why. Let me give you a great recommendation. Let me help you find another job. Let me support you in whatever way I can. But I can't have you as an employee any longer because we have to change our business model or we're not going to be in business at all. But he didn't have that knowledge until we sat down and started working on a business plan for them and looking at their financials and understanding what it meant that he was borrowing every month to make payroll. And it wasn't an inexpensive amount. So when we sat down and just had him do some of that back of the envelope math, he realized we had to sit down and we had to do more. We had to look at the business, current business model, and come up with a plan, a new plan, as if this was going to be a brand new business, or he wasn't going to have his doors open very long. And so we had to sit down and say, can your rent be changed? No, the rent was the rent. So you had a lease and it was just renewed. And so we walked through what could change. How many customers did he have? What was the average sale? How were they advertising and promoting the business? And so we kept working through and changing assumptions and doing the math and recalculating things with spreadsheets until we arrived at a business model, at a business plan that was sustainable. And so that also meant doing some things that they hadn't been doing and hadn't considered or known about in taking over the business, and apparently the previous owners hadn't either. But there were sales and use tax filing issues. There were property tax issues. There were different things that had to be cleaned up, and it was sitting down then with CPAs and attorneys and figuring out, okay, how do I clean this up? Because some things he had purchased when he purchased the business came along with the business. And that's something that we can't avoid. I can't ignore, no matter how much we would like to, is compliance with the rules and regulations related to payroll, to overtime, to paying minimum wage, to classifying an employee versus an independent contractor. And again, there are shows on all these elements that we've done over the past 3 years. But it was less costly to spend a week or 2 weeks sitting at the business, going through his financials, going through his numbers, looking at his average sales, looking at his pricing model, looking at his assumptions on commissions for his sales team, and understanding how the financials matched up to how he thought he was doing business versus how his business was actually operating. And so whether we are starting a new business or we're buying an existing business or we have a business that's struggling and we need to treat it as if it's a new business because we need to come up with a new way of doing business to stay in business, then it is an investment in our success to sit down, to document our assumptions, to say we're going to be open Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. Our website will be open and available for orders 24/7, 365. Or maybe it won't. I know I know one businessman that due to his faith, he does not even allow sales to occur on his website on his Sabbath day. And so his website has no transactions one day, 24-hour period, every week. And people say, but, you know, that's not, that doesn't make sense to me. Or we might look at a Chick-fil-A who's never open on Sunday, again, because of their values and their religious beliefs. And yet they're successful. And so what does that mean? That means if you have the right business model, if people understand what your values are and how you do business, if they know when you're going to be open and you serve them well, if you have something that they really want, your hours of operation, they will fit into. If they know they can't go to, if you know you can't go to Chick-fil-A on Sunday, you go on Saturday or you go on Monday or you go another day of the week. If you know a particular business person's website is unavailable for purchases on Saturdays, then you know to make arrangements to make your purchase on Friday or another day of the week. But we have to understand our capacity is affected by those operational decisions. And I tell all of my customers, live and plan your business according to your values. And if you live up to those values, if you communicate those values to your customers, and I'm going to say one value every business has to have to succeed is the value and respect of the customer. Just this morning, I stopped somewhere to get a beverage on the way to the station. And it's a well-established business, and they generated an article. I'll have you keep an eye out for it and visit my website for it about customer service. Because when I walked in their door, now I had probably 8, 9, 10 other places that I could have gone in for a beverage, but they were convenient. It's normally where I stop and get it. But I walked in their door this morning. No one spoke to me. No one said, hey, great to see you. No one smiled. I walked up to the counter to place my order for a beverage. And two people standing there. No one asked, can I help you? What do you want? You know, nothing. They looked at me and they looked away. And I said, I'd like a beverage, a fountain beverage. And again, they didn't say, hello, good to see you. Thanks for stopping in today. How have things been? Haven't seen you for a while. Just saw you last week, whatever. They said $1.94. And I'm like, okay. I hand them my $2. And they hand me a cup. And that was the end of the interaction. They walked away from serving me before the transaction had even entirely been completed. No change came back, which is fine. It's 6 cents. That's not the point. The point is that customer interaction tells me I am not valued as a customer. When I walked in the door, they didn't know whether I was going to buy a beverage for $1.94 or if I came in to order catering for an event that would have been $1,940. They didn't know where that decimal point was. All they knew was a customer walked in the door to do business with them, and they didn't value me as a customer. So next week when I come to the studio, will I walk in their door? No. I think I'll try one of the other 9, 10, 15, 20 options I have for getting a beverage. Even a vending machine would have been a more personal interaction than that this morning. And so when we're making our assumptions for how we're going to do business, when we're thinking about how we're going to staff, who we're going to hire, how people are going to interact with our customers, how we're going to create value for our customers, what benefits we're going to provide, how are we going to respect our customers, all of that has to come into our business model. How are we going to market? What are we going to invest in that? And I see so many businesses make huge investments in getting customers in the door. And then they lose them when the customer actually walks through the door. And that's a figuratively walking through the door. That could be going to your website to place an order. It could be calling your business for information. It could be physically coming into your business to do business. I remember growing up, and I've said it, I grew up in West Virginia, and it was a mix of farming community and, you know, retail and just normal business. We grew up near the Capitol, so, you know, the politicians and everything, too, there's that mix. But I remember going to a hardware store, and I'm not sure what we were there for, but we were at the hardware store, and it had been raining. And this gentleman walks in, covered in mud and other things from his farm. He was in his overalls, and yes, he was dirty, and he was grungy. And he came in, and he walked up to the counter. Now, mind you, I was probably, I want to say 6 or 7. I wasn't very old. And this transaction caught me. I didn't know the man, even though it was a small community. But there was an aura, let's say, about him. He had a commanding presence. But he walked in, and he walked up to the counter, and he looked at the guy, and he said, "I came to buy some linoleum." And the guy behind the counter kind of looked at him, and, well, let's just say he was about as friendly as the beverage purchased this morning for myself. And you could just see this judgment happening on the face of the cashier, and as this man was standing there with, okay, cow manure, mud, and all this stuff on. And you could tell he'd been out working hard that morning. And as I watched, and the guy goes, "Yeah, well, how much linoleum do you want?" And he goes, "Well, I want that entire roll." And if you looked at it, it was an industrial roll of linoleum. I would argue or guess probably had probably about 600 yards of linoleum probably on that spool, and it was a good 12, 14 feet long. And, you know, it wasn't something that was going to come down off the wall without a forklift and some maneuvering. And the guy looks at him and says, "You want that entire roll?" He goes, "Yeah." And you could see he was skeptical. He goes, "Well, how are you going to pay for that?" And that guy pulled out the biggest roll of cash I had ever seen in my young life, and probably other than my banking job and counting cash, you know, cashier's drawers at the bank and the vault, the most cash I had seen. And he says, "I'm going to pay for it with cash. Can you put it in my truck?" And once the cash came out, the cashier behaved differently. But as I tell my customers, you can never know which customer will have the biggest impact on your business. It may be the $1.94 purchase for a beverage. Maybe that person coming and thinking, "I'm going to buy a beverage because I want to talk to them while I make them my caterer for all of my business events." Or it may be a gentleman that, you know, owns horses and lots of cattle and decides it's been so rainy and he's so tired of mucking out the floor and the wading through the soggy straw that he's just going to put linoleum in his barn. You don't know when the customer walks in the door how they'll impact your business directly with an individual sale or over the lifetime of your business with multiple sales or indirectly with the word of mouth reputation and referrals and praise that they can sing for your business or the detrimental reviews they can give when you don't greet them, when you don't acknowledge them, when you judge them for how they're dressed. I had a friend in college. She was a professional lady taking accounting classes with us at night. And she was one of the most well-dressed, well-groomed women I had ever met. She was always completely coordinated, these wonderful suits and her jewelry and everything. And she told me about an experience when she went to buy a car with her husband. Well, her husband was a farmer. And so he was more dressed like the guy buying the linoleum at the hardware store. And she said she was talking to someone at the dealership, and they were treating her so lovely. And did she want a cup of coffee, and would she like to sit down and stuff? And then she said, "No, I'm waiting for my husband." And then her husband comes strolling in, straight from the barn pretty much, and she said the whole atmosphere changed, and he was the one they were actually there to buy a vehicle for. He needed one for his farming business, and so it was going to be a commercial vehicle purchase. And she said the look on their face when her husband walked through the door, and he stood there looking around and then headed to all those salespeople gathered around her and treating her so nicely. And she said someone spoke to her husband so rudely. And she said, in that moment, I realized what customer service really meant. It meant serving the customer with respect and with courtesy, whether they would actually become your customer or make a purchase, whether they were there to buy a small startup vehicle for their child or a used vehicle, or if they were there to spend $50,000 on a commercial vehicle. The definition of customer service and the ability to put in place and grow our businesses and be successful is as much about our values, how we respect the person walking in the door, regardless of their appearance, regardless of who they are or how they live their life, and not making assumptions on outward signals or appearances. And so when we're doing our business plans, when we're building our business for success, we need to spend at least 30 minutes thinking about what values are we going to put into our business? What are we going to teach our customers about who we are and how we do business? How are we going to train our employees? And what will we expect of our vendors? And what kind of relationships do we want to build? And we need those incorporated into our business assumptions. If we're not going to be open on Saturday or a Sunday, if we're going to make sure that our business is closed at least 2 days, consecutive days a week. If we're a dentist and we're going to have multiple locations and we're only going to be on the off in each office a part of each week, we need to respect that. If we're relocating from another part of the country to North Carolina or from North Carolina to another part of the country, we need to not make assumptions about how sophisticated, how knowledgeable, or how people do business. We need to understand and respect the communities that we do business in and how they do business, and not look at it as being inferior or superior, but maybe it's just different. We've had some people move in from out of state in our communities, and I've seen and heard comments from them about how different it is and that they needed to work to make it more like wherever they had moved from. And the question then becomes, why did you move from there if that's where you wanted to do business and the way you wanted business done? Our communities should be as varied as our values, I would say. But we need to find the place where our values fit into the community. As business owners, we're part of the community and we support through ethical business practices, through integrity and respect for our customers and doing business with them, and how we treat our customers and our employees, how we do business with our vendors. You can't afford not to invest in your business. You can't afford to not sit down and spend 30 minutes or less doing a back-of-the-envelope business plan. I'll argue that you need to spend a lot more than 30 minutes doing a business plan. You need to spend 30 minutes refining your concept and understanding just what business are you in and what benefits are you going to provide to the customer. Where is that customer and what does the customer expect about how you treat them and how they can make the purchase from you? You need to understand whether you're serving millennials or baby boomers or both and what the difference is in serving those groups. Are you providing services or are you making product? Are you doing both? The more defined and the more time that you take to write down and describe your business, to visualize it, to document it, and then to take that vision, that documentation, and translate it into real numbers, to take the time to know what your options about which retail space to locate in and the difference, the traffic patterns, all of those different types of things. Do your market research. Look at secondary and tertiary market research you might be able to get out there. Go to government websites. Look at census information. Look at Department of Labor information about wage rates. Talk to your Secretary of State's office. Do homework about your choices in legal entities and locations and which community you fit in best and has the type of customer that you want to serve, whether you're going to be on Main Street or Wall Street. Do your homework. Think about what it is that you want to achieve with your business and put a number to it. Then translate that number back through that into, you know, hours you need to be open. equipment you need to do things? How many people do you need? What skill sets do they have to have? Invest in these 7 steps of documenting your business assumptions, of breaking those business expenses and investments down into per unit, per hour, and per customer costs. Figure out what your average dollar sales value will be per transaction. Calculate the number of sales that you'll have to make to break even. Then take it a step further and see what the capacity of your business is and what sales level, what revenue level that can generate. Set a profit goal and then look to see how many sales you have to make. How many customers do you need to achieve that sales volume? And keep revising it. Don't be afraid to pull out the eraser to mark something through. Do your homework, whether you're a new business, whether you're an existing business that needs to make some changes. Have a plan of attack. Find your market. If you're going to change your market, treat it like it's going to be a new business and start from scratch with your assumptions. And then from those assumptions, say, what do I already have in place that fits within that? What do I need to change? Where do I need to make more investments? What do I need to do to be early to succeed and save yourself from early failure? Again, you can see the article on this topic. Use this formula to write a solid business plan in 30 minutes or less on fastcompany.com. Just type in my name. And then until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things.
There's a man down on the corner holding a sign. You know, I think he's right. Says the end of time. Saw a newsman on TV in a Colorado town, telling how some madman shot innocent people down. God, I hate to think what lies ahead. We don't get back to the Bible, start doing what Jesus said. We gotta pray like we've never prayed before. We gotta fight like a soldier in a war. Take a stand, every woman and every